This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Almost a decade ago, Brian Holsenbeck was walking along the Eno River and asked herself a life-changing question. Can I live without plastic for a year? She'd made a career as an artist, and while collecting trinkets and knickknacks for making baskets, her life in space had become consumed by stuff, much of it not biodegradable. So she made a deal with herself. She gave up single-use plastics for a year. During that time, she blogged about the ups and downs and aha moments of that experience, and those stories are now chronicled in her book, The Last Straw, A Continuing Quest for Life Without Disposable Plastic. Brian Holsenbeck is an environmental artist and an author and on our show right now. Welcome to The State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Frank. Great to be here.
Take us back to that walk on the Eno in that moment.
Well, it was an aha moment, and I love the Eno River. I am so grateful for being there, and there I was in my gratitude and thought, wait a minute, this place has been here forever and ever, and there wasn't always plastic in the world. It's new. It's a new thing. Let's see if I can do without some of it.
And so what did that mean? In that moment, what did that mean to you, do without plastic?
Well, I thought... Well, as a child, I would go to these places like Old Salem, you know, and see how they used to live in olden times. I said, well, okay, if olden times was like 30 years ago, I should be able to move back that far, shouldn't I? And then I thought, I'm going to try it. The other reason that I wanted to try it was because I had been in schools talking to kids about plastic and asking them where it comes from, and they never knew. And that was kind of upsetting me. And so this was like a forward action rather than an upsetting, you know, being upsetting.
All right. So you're going to do it for a year. What were the rules?
Well, the rules were just to try as best as I possibly could to have no plastic bags. Oh, no plastic. There were so many no plastic things that I didn't know that I was dealing with at that time. But it was...
Well, if you're going to blog, you're typing on plastic keys, right?
Right.
There you go.
Right, right. But that's not single use.
So you are limiting this to single use
plastics, right?
Right,
right. The stuff that is made to use once and throw away. That's what I limited it to. And I think in chapter 3, plastics that I love, like my dance tights and my computer and my running shoes, which those are not what I'm talking about. As much as I was talking about that stuff that is around every lot of food I was buying. And so it was a neat challenge to try to figure it out.
What were some of the big difficulties? You talk about them in the book. Crackers and cookies, for instance.
Oh, yeah. Cookies I could make.
Yeah.
And I got, like, about day 3, I just about freaked out about no chocolate chips for a year. I don't think I can do this. But I'd already signed up for doing it. And if I gave myself homework, I was going to do it. But then, guess what? Guess where their bulk bins? At our local co-ops.
Bless the co-op.
Yes, bless the co-ops. And so then I thought, okay, I'm good on that.
What about those plastic bags that you put in the bulk stuff?
Well, some co-ops don't have them.
Some co-ops don't have them. And to some extent, and I'm going to ask you about this, that plastic bag doesn't have to be single use. You can be a little creative about using it a couple of times.
Totally, totally.
Versus the wrapper on your crackers.
Which is more or less what happens to me now when they come into my life. But the other thing is there are tares. Do you know about the tares? T-A-R-E? You can bring in your jars or your whatever it is, and you can weigh them, and then you can use them over and over again. And so anybody with bulk bins will let you use a tare. And so that was a big lifesaver for me.
Yeah, that's
an
important thing to know. You get a weight, you mark that on before you do it, and then you fill it up, you subtract the weight, and then you pay for that. So you're doing more and more of that. And tell us about some of the other decisions and how it changed things for you. What kind of changes did you have to make?
Gosh, and I just had to be careful whenever I walked into any store. To be ready when I bought whatever it is I was going to buy to say, no bag, please, because it's such an automatic thing for people to do. And so it just was just sort of a vigilance that I had. And I could do it, and I still do it. And I just tried to learn to not be upset when they too quickly did it. Just try to catch them before they use that motion and just say no thank
you. Well, you do, and you talk about this with straws, too. You do develop a kind of sensitivity. You are extremely aware of this. The people at the restaurant aren't yet. You're hoping they'll come along. In fact, talk about that moment that you had, I think, in one restaurant with the straws. And it was particularly a place where you hadn't expected to get a straw in the first place.
Even it was recent. And it was recent. Yeah. And it was a very nice restaurant in Cary, which I think has some sort of a motion where a lot of the restaurants were going be straw free.
Right.
And so this particular restaurant actually did have paper straws in the bar. And so they were sort of up on stuff. I didn't know that then. And I was talking to this wonderful parent. I was working in a school and we were talking. And I turned around and there was the straw in the glass. And I went, and I never do this. If it's there, it's there. You know, but for some reason, I just went off on, you brought me this. I can't believe you brought me this. And I was kind of embarrassed, but. Yeah. You know, I did it, and she just kind of meekly took it out, which they always do. But anyway, and so the parent called the restaurant because she knew the owner, and the owner said, "Well, you know, we do have a policy not to give people straws unless they ask." That this particular, I guess they hadn't told the employee.
But it does get to a little bit of, I'm going to get more examples and talk about this, but there is a way in which, you know, on this journey, when we're trying to be more conscientious about the way we shop, about the use of products, just in general, the way we sort of have to govern ourselves and govern expectations, right? I mean, did you have a long talk with yourself about utopia and changing the world?
You know, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you that I became a scout. And I would sort of scout out. And I began to learn which stores would work for me and within the store what I could do. And being a scout and then being successful felt so much better than feeling overwhelmed or angry.
So that it gave you something to do. You had a mission and you were never finished. I mean, that's part of it, right?
Yeah. And I will add that sometimes I would think, oh, I'm not going to figure this one out. Like I wanted to go camping once. And like, yeah, what does ice come in? Plastic bags. And I you know, it's pretty environmental to go camping. But and I was pretty determined to go camping. And I'm thinking, all right, I'm going to break my thing and get some ice because I really want to go camping and it's hot and it's summer and I want to be near that lake. And so I told a friend of mine, Dave Rogers, and he looked at me and he said, Bryant, how many people do you know that either work in or own a restaurant? Who are you friends with? Where can you get your ice? And I went like,
just giant jars of ice that you bring with you.
Right. And you could, of course, I could have saved it up if I'd had a big freezer. But that was just like, oh, yes, that's another aha. I just got, my brain would just sort of gave up the hunt. But other people helped me. If I was going to give up, somebody was there to tell me.
They knew. And of course, your relationship with plastic goes back a long way. Your dad was a textile engineer, right?
Tell us
about that.
That's right. He used to come home. He worked for Allied Chemical, and he worked up and down the East Coast and would take us on trips to, like, where they were making a nylon pantyhose. But he would come home with bright, shiny nylon golf pants that, oh, my gosh, you wouldn't wear them now. And it was amazing that he was wearing them then, but he did. But once he showed me this coil of rope, and it was the rope was, like, the diameter was no bigger than my little finger. And he said, Brian, you could pick up a car with this. And I'm like, I don't think so, Dad. But it was really that first rope that now all sea rope is made of that. And it's not biodegradable, and it is a problem in, what's a big problem?
Yeah, and of course, the other thing is imagining a world. I mean, it's one thing to do this and to make yourself more mindful and to make yourself a more conscientious consumer. What is an end goal for you sort of in the larger picture? Because as you would try to imagine a world without plastic, it gets hard to picture, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes. Because we lean towards what's convenient. Yeah. And I don't think people really want to take the hard way out. We kind of want to take the magic way. Right. You know, and even kids, when I ask them where plastic comes from and I tell them it's not biodegradable, they just like, well, how could that be? Like, you could recycle paper to save trees. We need to be saving the world. This is wrong, but it's easier to
Well, no, but I think you're onto something here. Magical thinking, utopia, all the things that capitalism sells us, right? I mean, the idea that this is the app that's going to make your life so easy. This is going to change everything. And there is inherent. I mean, nobody would admit to believing in utopia, but everybody does. Every time you buy something else, that's the thing that's going to utterly transform my life once and for all. And it's this fundamental belief in magical thinking in utopia that actually leads us to think that those conveniences are really convenient because we don't see the costs. You're paying the cost. You're paying the cost of plastic. You're paying the cost of inconvenience. You're paying the cost of being spied on by your phone. You're paying that cost. So, I mean, I think that's one of the, and that seems to me a harder sell than even trying to ask people to be more conscientious about straws. Getting them to rethink the actual costs. What are some of the costs? Let's talk about those. Some of the costs of plastic and what it is that we don't see when we think it's cheaper because maybe the container was less to make. But the cost of disposal then adds up, and somehow we're all paying that.
Well, you know that China has stopped taking all our mixed up plastic. And so, of course, who's going to and what happens to a lot of that plastic? It gets burned to make fuel. And what is that burning doing to the air? That's not very good. And I think that I think I was reading there's a new quote out that by 2050 there will be more plastic in the ocean than fish. That's not very far away. And I think we were just talking about that. But what about the fact that plastic is in everything that we eat now? It's there.
This is through leaching. You mean we're not making
maybe leaching or maybe little plastic particulates that are in the water. Both.
Right.
Both.
So, and even with recycling, or let's talk about biodegradable. What about going to biodegradable plastics?
I have understood that plastics made to use once and last for other aren't necessarily biodegradable like compost. Now, compost is something that feeds the earth when it gets back into it. But if something just breaks down into smaller and smaller particles, that's not really value. It's not feeding the earth again.
Right.
It's not a full circle thing.
Yeah, and it's very particular environments that have to happen. It's costly.
Right.
As is recycling is costly because plastics don't necessarily, they continually degrade. So you don't get a one-for-one match. You got to add a little more plastic every time. So all of those things, which is not to say don't recycle, it is to say that's not the answer.
Answer.
You talked about, too, I mean, some of the moments you had. I mean, you talk about being in Guatemala after Hurricane Agatha, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or during, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But
talk
about that experience and again, another sort of epiphany you have.
Well, we heard the booming in the middle of the night. We're all in this beautiful old kind of home in the volcanoes that surround this lake. And we heard this booming in the middle of the night, which turned out that was... In this hurricane, it was the earth letting go from the sides of the mountain and slipping, like mud, slipping into the lake. And so in the morning, when we woke up, the lake was covered and littered in plastic, like people's, because it had slid through all these villages. And, you know, all their plastic chairs, plastic utensils, plastic anything, it was all floating on top of the ocean. Not the ocean, the lake. This is a lake.
The lake
does float on top of oceans too, if that happens. But
what was it like in this process, blogging about this, communicating? What were you hearing from other people, and how useful was it for you to sort of write about it and put it all in perspective?
I was really inspired to write about it because it was exciting, both figuring it out. And what I learned from other people and what I began to learn. The minute that I started doing it, it was the beginning of the Obama administration when Time magazine came out with some EPA reports on all the plastic leaching that was happening with these plastics that we eat out of and, you know, that are bottled. And so that had not been, I didn't know about that.
Yeah,
and here
yeah.
Time, you know, so that was really interesting. And it was great to have a way to write about that and to talk about that and figure stuff out.
It's also, has it changed the way you do art? You were collecting a lot, but maybe you should describe your art and the way that you approach your work and whether or not things changed as a result of this experience.
Yeah, I think so. I during this time, I began to do these large-scale plastic bottle waterfalls with all these plastic bottles that people in different communities collected for me, and they were so ready to collect them. because there's so many of them. Yeah. I was up in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, and just like so many more than we could use, maybe 20,000 they collected. And I did one in Midland, Texas, where it's in the middle of the Permian oil basin, where we're getting all the oil out of the ground for inland for gasoline.
Mm-hmm.
They can't drink their water because they're surrounded by pump jacks. I mean, there's no groundwater worth drinking anywhere.
Yeah. So, well, are people becoming more, do you think, conscientious? I mean, certainly people seem to be aware, but I wonder if you think it's enough, if we have to sort of go deeper and maybe even make deeper sacrifices to make any kind of meaningful change.
Well, I think it feels much better to think about this and just do what you can personally do. I think that's just, it's like a blessing. It's just a personal act that feels better than thinking, oh, this is awful. This is just awful. And if you do that from day to day, then my hope is that when opportunities come to do bigger things, to vote for something, to push for something, to push for composting within your community, to sign up for composting with Compost Now, you'll do it. But you have to start with those little teeny steps.
But here's the big test. After that year was over, did you rush right back to crackers with cellophane wrappers?
That was the one thing I did.
The crackers.
Just the crackers.
Okay.
Well, and then all this. Any cracker that I made tasted like a hockey puck. I didn't have to do the cookies,
those
but
are
the
hard
crackers.
To get right, aren't they? Yeah.
But the whole year before, I was stolen your cracker.
So that's what happened. How much did change? How much of your habits then, was it not difficult for you to figure out ways? You didn't go back. How much did you?
Pretty much. I mean, yeah. I never, you know, put no thank you to plastic bags. I'd use the tear. A lot of it is pretty, you know, I carry around silverware or I eat with my hands. I always forget my silverware. But I have 15 different water bottles have been lost and found in my life, but I always have one. There's one sitting out there in the lobby.
What about, we're talking about personal responsibility here, but should corporations take more responsibility?
Yes.
How is that going to work? Because they don't like losing money.
No, they don't like losing money. And they have, if you read the widening gyre in the New Yorker a couple of weeks ago, really the corporations sort of wrote it like it's the consumer's responsibility for what we do with our plastic, where that's the wrong equation.
We're seeing a place like McDonald's has got more paper wrappers and they're moving away because there's been this push and they read the papers and they're following social media. Look, if they think this is going to affect their bottom line, whether it's about their image or actually sales, you know, they'll do it. If not, if you do keep buying it, they're going to keep making it.
Well, that's right.
They're going to keep making it.
We need to tell more people, you don't like that? Not only don't buy it, but tell people why.
Yeah.
And say, I'm buying this product because of this. And I think that, you know, that all these, now I'm old enough to have more than one younger generation below me, but they're acting on this.
Yeah.
The woman that met me here, she's a podcast on interesting things and very interested in using less plastic. She's and concerned, and rightly so, about the fact that most clothes now are emitting plastic particulate. That's right.
Yeah, then you're wearing it and it's falling off on you and it's
right.
getting into the water supply
right. so,
over and over.
Young adults are aware, and I am very hopeful that more and more of them, and I think they are more and more of them, are acting.
Brian Holzenbeck is an environmental artist and an author. Her book is The Last Straw, A Continuing Quest for Life Without Disposable Plastic. Thank you so much. Bryant is going to be at Flyleaf Books in Chapel Hill on Thursday, March 21st at 7 o'clock. She's going to speak at the Orange County Public Library in Hillsborough at 7 on Tuesday, March 26th. And we've got all that at our website, stateofthings.org.